Thank you very much. I travel the world. I'm really very famous. I have to tell people because most people don't seem to know. But I travel the world and I really get to see all different types of people and speak to all kinds of different audiences. And I really enjoy, you know, all audiences. But I have to tell you that there are certain places where it's mamish a labor of love. And when I get to have the schus to come to the yeshiva, this for me is something that's really exceptional. You know, Rabbi Wallerstein is somebody who's just so l'shem shemayim, as is the entire staff and everybody who's involved. And everybody who comes is just such a beauty and a feeling that when you come here, that it's really a schus for me to be a part of it and to be considered part of the Or Yitzchak family. I have two completely different things I want to talk about, and that's not really true. I have four or five different things I want to talk about, but two of them that I'm actually going to incorporate into one shiur because I think there's an overlap. I have been teaching Mesillas Yesharim for close to 30 years, and it's absolutely amazing. Every time you learn it, that you get deeper insights into it. It has the ability to really give you such insights into life, just like real life. Obviously, you have to know how to do it. You know, you have to know how to be able to see it. I was teaching one time, and you know, I was making some observation that the Mesillas Yesharim was saying about life and the way I was presenting it. You know, so everybody was laughing. And this Yerushalmi walks by the base medrash. He sees everybody laughing. He says, "What are they learning?" He says, "Mesillas Yesharim." He goes, "I don't remember it being that funny, you know." So it's because you don't know how to look at it. You know, the Mesillas Yesharim it talks to us. Now, to be fair, it's all Kabbalah. It's all on the deepest levels. The fact that there are 26 prakim, yud ke, vav ke, the fact that there are 10 levels and 10 spheres. I mean, okay, all of that is the Kabbalah stuff, but like Rashi's Perish al Chumash, what was brilliant about it is that a child can read it and get insight, and Mekubalim can read it and also get tremendous insight into it. Thank you very much. So, if you take it a little bit, you go a little deeper into it, you can get such tremendous insights into life. You know, this is totally parenthetical. You know. Perek Gimel tells you how to make a cheshbon nefesh. And I have heard from two or three different mechanchim that they tell students not to make a cheshbon nefesh because we can't handle it today and it's not for us and it's going to make you depressed. But the Mesillas Yesharim says it's the only way for you to be able to change your life. So the answer is, you just don't know how to do it. Not that there's a problem with the cheshbon nefesh, you just don't know how to do it. You know, and if you look carefully at the way he describes it in Perek Gimel, you'll realize it's not dissimilar to the method that Stephen Covey describes in the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. You know, there's an overlap over there, although you don't find that brought down in most of the Mefarshim. So, you know, you have to know how to look at it. I want to bring you one paragraph here, and remember, When I teach Mesillas Yesharim, I always start with the principle that the Vilna Gaon gave. The Vilna Gaon, who was no slouch, a very bright man, yeah, he said that he found all Taryag Mitzvahs in the first word of the Torah, Bereishis. All 613 mitzvahs in that one word. I don't know where they are. And the only one that they tell over is he was at a Pidyon HaBen. He says, "Where's Pidyon HaBen in Bereishis?" He says, "What do you mean? It's a Rashi Tevos. Ben Rishon, Acharei Shloshim Yom, Tipode." Yeah, it's right there. His firstborn after 30 days, redeem it. Yeah. So he could do through all the mitzvahs, right? Where by the time he was the age of 40, he only had two svarim that he used. The Torah, because he could find everything in the Torah, and the Mesillas Yesharim. He said if the Ramchal was alive, he would walk on foot to learn Torah from him. Now, whether he was referring to you know, Padua in Italy or Amsterdam, it's a long walk from Vilna, either way you slice it, you know. He said he could not find one extra word in the first 11 prakim of Mesillas Yesharim. So, I always say, when you see where it looks like he's being redundant, it can't possibly be. So, in the first parak, when he sums up what the whole purpose of life is and why we're here, he comes to this paragraph. Klala shel dava. Here's the rule. Ha'adam lo nivra ba'avur matzava olam hazeh, ala ba'avur matzava olam haba. A person was not created for his situation in this world, rather for his situation in the next world. Ala shel matzava olam hazeh, hu emsi ala matzava olam haba, shehu tachlisai. But this world is necessary for the next world. Right? And he says, Al kein timsa mamari chachomim zichrona lebracha rabim. There are a lot of chazal, kulam besignan echad, all of them of the same type, medamen ahol mazel amokum uzman ha'achona, which compares this world as a time and place of preparation, and the next world is a place where you rest and eat what you have prepared. This world is an entrance hall to the world to come. Hayom la'asosim, umalchut kabascharim. Today you do, and tomorrow you get your reward. Misha tarach be'erev Shabbos yochel b'Shabbos. Anyone who prepares on erev Shabbos will eat on Shabbos. Ha'olam zedom liyaboshav, ha'olam abal liyam. This world is compared to the dry land. The next world is compared to the sea. Uke'ele rabim alzeh haderach, and many more. Now, the Vilna Gaon said there's not one extra word. He says there are many chazal that all say the same thing. Here's one, here's two, here's three, here's four. And by the way, there's a whole bunch more. So, okay, either list all of them, or list one of them. Why do you list four of them, and you, by the way, end with by saying there are many more besides these four, so why did you bother to bring four? So that is a question that bothered me for many years. Now I'll share another question with you. I used to daven in Long Beach and Congregation Bachuri Chemed of Yitzchak Frankel, who is now the Rav of the Aguda of the Five Towns, was the Rav. And he used to do a thing at the end of davening that any kid could ask any question they wanted. A kid would say, I have a robot and I took out the batteries. Can I play with it on Shabbos? You know, those kind of questions. They were very nice. Anyway, one week this kid stands up and he says to him, how come there's no samach in Kel Adon? Kel Adon, we say Shabbos morning. Kel Adon, Kol Maasim, Beis, Baruch Hu, Baruch Hu, Fikol Neshama, Gimel, God, Lo, Vatu, Mahalei, Olam, Da'as, Uzvuna, Sabi, Masa, Ha'am, Iskoya, Chayas, HaKodesh, Vav, Ne'adav, Gadol, Al, Merkava, Zechus, Umisha, Lifnei, Chisa, Chesed, Varach, Mim, Lifnei, Kivodo, Tov, Amir, Osh, Mali, Yud, Tov, So, I'm without Zbim, Haskel, I didn't have to do the whole thing. I just like to sing. I just can't get anyone to listen to me. So I became a speaker so that once they're here, I sing. Actually, I will tell you the truth that I was in Flatbush for the Shabbos Project, Project Inspire. And Friday night, I was by Rabbi Landau. I had the Suda by him with Rabbi Shwebel, who, if you ask your grandparents, they'll tell you he used to sing with the Vekas, and, you know, years ago. Anyway, so I was there with my son, and he didn't know who he was, you know. So I started singing some of the classic, you know, the Vekas tunes that I know that he had the lead on, you know. We're singing it, and that's what he says, you know, you and your son have really good voices. Anyway, so I'm moving into the concert thing from now on. So next time you'll see me at the Brooklyn College concert, you know, I'll be doing, singing Shrekie's greatest hits. Anyway, and he'll be giving the Devar Torah. So, there's a lot to say at this point. But anyway, so how come there's no Samech? Why is it a sin? Smechem, a sin. So he says, well, you know, some letters are interchangeable. You know, Samech is interchangeable with sin. You know, so he says, yeah, but you didn't change any of the other letters. He says, well, you find in a lot of piyutim, you know, in Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, that the samach is switched for the sin. He says, why they switch it over there? So he said, it's a good question, I'll look into it. Comes the next week, next Shabbos, and here's are there any questions. This kid raises his hand. How come there's no samach in Kel Adon? He says, I remember the question, you know, I'm still looking into it. Comes the third week, the kid stands up, he says, I'll let you know when I have an answer. Okay, sit down. Yeah? And I remember it was Parshas Truman. And he looks at this kid and he says, do you have a question? And the kid stood right up and goes, how come there's no Samach in Keladon? He says, it's a Baal Turim. The Baal Turim says, and Parshas Truma, in the whole Parsha of the Menorah, there's no Samach, because the Menorah represents Briyas HaOlam, and in the entire story of the creation of the world, there's no Samach, because the Samach represents the Satan. And the Satan is evil, and there's no evil in the making of the Menorah, etc. Very nice. This kid raises his hand. Satan is spelled with a sin, not with a samach. And he said, I'll get back to you. Now, I wasn't there when he, I'm sure he answered at some point. But the question is interesting. Yeah? Why do we leave at samach? What does that mean? It's the letter of the Satan. So Satan is not a name. Satan is not a name. Satan is a position. Satan means the accuser. He is the prosecutor in the heavenly court. That's why when we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, destroy the Satan, not because he's wrong, but in the favorite position of the mafia families, we want to kill the prosecutor because he's right, not because he's wrong. The Satan is, and the Gemara tells us that this is one of the busiest malachim out there. As the Yetzirah, he tempts you. As the Satan, he accuses you. And as the Malach HaMavis, he carries out the sentence. He's a busy guy. Yeah? He also has another job. And that job, we find out about in this week's Parsha. Yeah? Yaakov Avinu goes back to collect the Pachim Ketanim. He goes back to get those, nickel return bottles that we all throw away without even thinking about, And there's usually somebody, dressed in rags walking down the street digging through our garbage to find them, They go collect all the nickels. I mean, this pasnish pas, He was going back with a shopping cart, to go and collect the little nickel deposit bottles, the pachim ketanim. And suddenly, he is attacked by the Malach Avesim. Which, by the way, is not fair. I can fight with you, and your Malach can fight with my Malach, but your Malach can't come and fight with me. That's not fair, right? But okay, so they're wrestling, and he hits him in the leg, and he's limping, and he grabs him, and finally he's got his wings pinned behind his back, and he says, let me go, I have to go. And he says, no, not unless you give me a bracha. V'yomer lav mashmecha. What's your name? V'yomer Yaakov. V'yomer lo Yaakov yemod shimcha. Your name will no longer be Yaakov. Kiyam Yisrael. V'yishal Yaakov v'yomer hagidi no shmecha. Tell me your name. V'yomer lomazeh tishal l'shmi. Why do you ask my name? Wow, touchy. I don't know, we were wrestling all night. I told you my name. How bad could it be? You know what I mean? what's your problem? Well, embarrassing, There was this guy who's I forgot exactly what his name was, but he went to the judge to change his name, and he says I he had to give an explanation. So my name was one of these Jewish names, a little embarrassing, So he says, I want to explain to you why I want to change my name. He says, it's not necessary. So he says, thank you very much, Judge Lipschitz. You know what I mean? He says, you know what to tell me, You don't know why. There's a guy who was called Joe Jerkhead, So he went to change his name. He says, I have to ask the question. Why? He goes, it's so embarrassing. Every time I meet people, they go, hello, Joe. So the Jerkhead part he wanted to keep. That wasn't the problem, So people make this mistake, It's like... It's unpleasant. It's an unpleasant reality. But in Israel and a lot of the schools, they have quotas how many Sephardic students they accept. The reason is, it's kind of ironic, because if they take too many Sephardim, then the Sephardim don't want to go, because now it's a Sephardi school. Because you know? They want to go to an Ashkenazi school, but they can't if there's too many Sephardim. So they have to limit the amount of Sephardim. It's as Groucho Marx once said, I would never join a club that would have me as a member. You know, so you only want to go to the school that's not my school. You know? So people change their name, you know, so that they can, you know, get in even though they're Sephardi. But they only change their last name. They don't realize. They come in and go, I'm Amram. This is my wife, Mazal. This is my daughter, Simcha. We're the Goldbergs. I don't know how you get around that. I don't know. Bunch of diet. You know. But anyway, so he says, what's your name? He says, why do you ask my name? You know, it's like, gosh. So a number of the Mefarshim say, he was not being coy. That was his name. The Satan, who is also the Yetzer Hara, who is also the Malach HaMavis, who is also the Malach of Esav, his name is, why are you asking my name? That's his name. Now, what does that mean? Samach is the letter of the Satan because he has a real name. That name is Sam-Kel. Right? In some Sidurim, I think mostly Sephardi Sidurim, where they put in the names of like different kind of malachim and stuff, you could see his name sometimes appears over certain things. You know, he is the malach that represents all of these things. Sam Kale. What is Sam? From a Lashon Suma, blindness of God. Blindness. Now that we understand who this guy is, let's go and plug him back into Mesilas Yesharim. Why is the book called Mesilas Yesharim? Obviously, everything here is worked out. Mesilas Yesharim. So you know from Shabbos morning, B'fi Yesharim tisalov divrei tzadikim tisbarach vilshon chasidim tisraimam uvekerev kedoshim tisbarach. I'm still available for Rosh Hashanah. Anyway, so you see that list for you, Yesharim, Tzadikim, Chasidim, and Kedoshim. Four levels. Yeah? The Mesilas Yesharim in Perek Yud Gimel, when he comes to Precious, he says, everything I explained to you until now is to teach you how to become a tzaddik, and from here on in, I'm going to teach you how to become a chasid. There's something called a tzaddik, and there's something called a chassid. What is a tzaddik? He defines it for you in Chassidus. A tzaddik is a person who does what he's supposed to do and doesn't do what he's not supposed to do. A nice, firm Jew. That's what we call a tzaddik. Right? Does everything he's supposed to do, doesn't do what he's not supposed to do. That's a tzaddik. What's a chassid? A chassid is someone who goes lifnei mashuras hadin. Someone who does more, and as he says in Perek Yud Ches, out of love for Hashem. Meaning, you have a job, and your husband and your boss says to you, you know, I want you to go out and get me breakfast. Right? Okay. Your wife's not feeling well. She says, honey, could you make me breakfast? Right? So, you know, make her some scrambled eggs, get a little cottage cheese, slice up some vegetables, put it in nicely. Maybe you put it on a tray. Maybe you'll put a little rose on the tray, you know? Whatever. Anyway, and you bring it over. You say, oh, honey, that's so nice. Now, I tell you the truth, I do everything except the rose. I don't do the rose. But, you know, and my wife is always like, I don't need all that. Just, you know, if you make me a scrambled egg, that's fine enough, you know? But she always eats the vegetables and the cottage cheese. She always seems very happy about it. So I haven't changed from it. But I'm doing that, of course, because it's for my wife. Now, if your boss says to you, you know, go out and get me breakfast, so you might just go out and get a scrambled egg and a roll and a cup of coffee and put it on a brown paper bag. You might not put it on a tray with a rose and say, here, boss, I got you your breakfast. There's something a little creepy about that, you know? Little creepy. Right? When you really care about somebody, I happen to like grapefruits. You know? It's one of the many foods I'm not allowed to eat. And the older I get, the list grows. but I like grapefruits. The reason is because I'm on certain medications that grapefruits are not good for you. Whatever it is, but you take a grapefruit, you cut it into sections, and yeah, you eat it like a big orange. You know? My father used to like it. I had a grapefruit knife. I had to cut it in half and cut out every section of the grapefruit. Now, my mother had no patience for this, so she would cut a circle in the middle, a circle at the end, and slash it at random. But I knew my father liked it, so I would sit there and do this, and he'd say, "Oh, you see? David makes it the way I like it." You know, that was, I gave him nachas. Yeah? You know? I chas v'shalom, to make it sound like my mother didn't care about these things. It just wasn't that important to her. She thought, basically, the grapefruit will taste the same, you know? But my father had this dream. He always wanted to wear a new pair of socks. So towards the end of his life, my mother went out and bought boxes and boxes of socks. My father would wear them one time. She'd wash them and give them away at Tzedakah. Every day he wore a new pair of socks. That's, by the way, where the expression sock nachas comes from, in case you were wondering. So that's if you want to give nachas. So, but when you love somebody, you do more than you have to, right? When you're an employee, you do what you have to do. That's a tzaddik. A tzaddik does what he has to do. It doesn't do what he's not supposed to do. And a chassid does more out of love. What is a kadosh? That's at the end of Masil Sharm. The last line is called a kadosh. A kadosh is somebody who everything they do in this world is kadosh. So the only thing we don't explain is Yisharm. And nowhere does he explain Yisharm. Because the entire book is called Masil Sharm. What does that mean? The letter that represents the satan is a samach. What is a samach? It is a circle. What do you know if you're on a circle? You will never go anywhere. And it doesn't matter how many times you go around or how far you travel, you won't get anywhere. And more than anything, the satan, the Yetzer Hara, wants your life to go around in a circle and go no place. We all know people who have made the same mistakes in life as a teenager, in their 20s, in their 30s, in their 50s, in their 70s. You ever watch somebody in their 50s or 60s have a temper tantrum, you know what I'm talking about. It's not pretty to watch. You know what I mean? And they make the same stupid mistakes. They don't grow. You know, there was a movie with Bill Murray called Groundhog's Day, which I researched on Wikipedia. And essentially, that's how I do research. Anyway, essentially this guy lives the same exact, it was like the worst day of his life. And he wakes up and it's the same day. And it's the same day. And he tries killing himself. He tries this, doesn't matter what he does, he wakes up and it's the same day. And it goes on like this. The person who wrote the article estimates about 40 years. That he's reliving the same exact day. And eventually, he gives it up. He realizes, this is, my life is going to be just this day. And he works, and he works, and works, until at the end, he says, this was the best day of my life. And the next day, he wakes up, and it's the next day. Because he finally figured out, in life, you're going to keep living the same day until you make it meaningful. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you the same tests over and over again. You know who he is. He is someone who is in your life. His only purpose is to annoy you. That's why he exists. That's why God created him and put him in this world. You know, and I don't know who he is, but everyone has somebody like this in their life. Some of them are close talkers who like stand right in front of you, and when you back up, they back up with you, and they like really in your personal zone, you know. Or you have the ones who poke you when they're talking, which is not as bad as the ones who slap you on the shoulder for emphasis. That's the reason we're doing it. That's the reason. And there's one elderly gentleman, and one day I'm going to really strangle him. I know I'm just going to knock him to the ground and kill him because I'm like, you know. You know, or they're, you know, they, you know, they never really mastered the skill of personal hygiene, and they, you know, they're always in your face, quite literally, you know, or they say the same thing over and over and over and over again, and you just nod along, you know, and there's nothing you can do about it. Why do these people exist? Because eventually you're going to figure out how to not let it bother you. And then there's somebody even more annoying waiting for you, you know? But You know you're going to have the same. You're going to have the same challenges. How long are you going to put off having to face it and just go around in a circle? And there are people who go around in a circle and they never change their life. Here's a fact. It's a fact. Most people do what most people do because that's what most people do. That's a fact. Yeah? I talk to guys, come to my house, they're learning in Eretz Yisrael. I say, how did you pick this yeshiva? You know, you were really tired of Nashim Nezikin. You really had a she'ifa to learn Kudshim. You know, that's why you went there. You know, you were dying to do Zvachim. Why did you? And eventually they'll give me one or two answers, either because it has a great name or because that's where my friends went. And that's how we make decisions. I used to teach in seminary, and I unfortunately ruined many, many girls' lives because I taught them how to think, which is a disadvantage today, you know. And they would go out with a guy who, you know, says, I really want to learn, you know, I really want to learn. And they'd say, why? And the guy would just fall apart, you know what I mean? Because everybody learns, like, that's what you're supposed to do. Because everyone does what everyone does. The second year I was teaching in seminary and I taught Mesillas Yesharim, at the end of the first semester, this girl says to me, when I came here, I had my whole life worked out. I knew what kind of guy I was going to marry, what I was going to do for a living, where I was going to live, what kind of shaita I was going to buy. I had my whole life worked out. And now, halfway through your course, I'm disgusted by the person I almost became. And she paused and said, and I realized the odds are I'm probably going to do it anyway. Because most people do what most people do, because that's what most people do. And to get people to think and break out of that circle and say, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? You know, is this what I really want? And you have to stop and think. And maybe what I want is different from everybody else. Maybe I have a different thing that I want to do and a different way I want to approach life. The first thing I have to do is break out of that circle. Break out of the satan. Lama de tishal shmi. Why are you asking any questions? Don't ask any questions. Just keep doing what you do because that's what everyone does. And don't stop to think about it. You stop to think about it. Gosh, who knows where that's going to take you? And that's why the Mesillas Yesharim in Perek Bei says, more than anything, the Yetzer Hara wants to keep you busy so you don't have a chance to think. Because, and he says this line, which people try to wish away, yeah? Because he knows that if you start to think, vadai, miyad, definitely, immediately, you'll begin to regret the bad things you do and you'll change your life. Therefore, more than anything, he wants to get you to stop thinking. I saw Mefarshim who said, well, you know, it's not really true because you see there are people who think and they think. And it's not true. Most people don't think. They think till it starts to hurt. Then they stop. In Musa, they used to give an example. And they say, you know, you go to a little kid and you pinch his cheek and the kid says, ow, ow, ow. The guy says, I don't understand. When I pinch my cheek, it doesn't hurt. He says, because you don't pinch your cheek like you pinch mine. You'll stop when it starts to hurt. So we're willing to look at our lives and reconsider until it starts to get uncomfortable. I used to talk to people and they go, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to talk. I have people who literally put their hands over their ears. I don't want to hear it. Baruch Hashem, your generation has perfected this. You can push away everything that anyone says to you with one word. Whatever. There is no response to whatever, right? And so you say something to somebody and they're listening and go, yeah, whatever. Now, what do you do? What do you say? There's nothing to do. They just, you know, to make somebody stop and think. I had a girl, she was in high school. When I met her, she was in 10th grade. And for 2 years, she got involved with this group of non-Jewish kids. She used to sneak out when her parents were sleeping and go out and do drugs with them. For 2 years, she'd been doing PCP, angel dust, pretty bad stuff. And that's when I met her. And she was fooling her parents. And I figured, I said, aren't you afraid I'm going to tell your parents? She says, no, they won't believe you. And I'll never talk to you again, she says. I'll never talk to you again. I'm trusting you. But if you ran on me to my parents, I'll say, nah, I don't know where he got that from, you know, and they won't believe you at all. So I went to a psychologist, you know, a guy who works in the field, and he says, she knows her parents better than you do. If she's sneaking out of the house since she's in sixth grade, you know what I mean? And she's been doing this, you know, several nights a week, and they don't know about it, they don't want to know about it. I said, what do I do? I said, try to keep her alive. So for the next year and a half, she would call me in the middle of the night before she was going out with her friends and stuff. And over the year and a half, three of her friends died of overdoses. And I'd go to sleep at night not wondering what I was going to find out the next day. You know, it was so hard. And finally, when her third friend died, I got her to come in and call a halfway house. And the halfway house, she put it on speaker, you know. They wanted her just to come down and have an exam. Let's see if there's any permanent damage. Maybe there's something we can change. Maybe we can do. You know, and she says, I'll think about it, you know. And she hung up the phone. I said, are you going to go? She says, no. I said, but why don't you stop and think for once in your life? Don't you realize that this is your life, that you could lose everything? She looks at me and says, you don't get it. I'm afraid to think. That's why I take the drugs. I can't handle life. I can't stop and think. Because if I were to stop and think, then vadai miyad, as the Mesil Shem says, you would change your life. So more than anything, the Yetzer Hara wants you to keep going around in circles and not think. Sam Kel, the blindness of God. So you can't see where you're going. Mesil Shem says, the first thing is, I got to get you to break out of that and get onto a straight road, that I'm going to a destination. And that's the first chazal he brings. This world is an entrance hall. I'm going somewhere. That this world is a journey. Avram Avinu discovered God at the age of three. The Torah doesn't tell us about it. He stood up against the entire Dor HaPlugah. The Torah doesn't tell us about it. He got thrown into a kishon ha'esh, was miraculously saved. Nobody tells us about it. The Rambam says he had tens of thousands of Talmidim in Haran, in his yeshiva. The Torah doesn't tell us about it. He's introduced to the world with the words, Lech Lecha, you're on a journey. You're going somewhere. And I have to tell you, let's be honest. How many Jews have stopped their journey? How many people have just given up? And they are where they are, and they do what everyone does, because that's what everyone does. And to sit down and think, is this the best that I can do? Could I be living a better life? Could I be doing more? That's an exceptional person. And that's the first thing I have to do. I have to become Yosha. I have to break out of the circle. And if you do, you'll go through three stages. The first one is, you'll work on doing what you're supposed to do and not doing what you're not supposed to do. Halavai. Everybody was a tzaddik. Halavai, I didn't do anything wrong and I did everything I was supposed to do. I didn't do anything extra. Do anything extra. I just do what I'm supposed to do, and I don't do what I'm not supposed to do. Hayom la'asosam, umach la'kabasharam. Today I work, and tomorrow I get paid, like an employee. Get me lunch, I take the brown paper bag, I put it on your desk, and that's fine. But if you go a little bit more into it, he says, then you'll realize that the whole purpose of this world, it's not just a journey to get someplace. You know what that is? To have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Oh, most people don't even know what that means. Right? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in our life, at least if you had the sort of education that I did, he's the big scary face in the sky who's going to burn you in hell. And that's it. You know, Baruch Hashem, most of the people here are from Brooklyn. If you have a good Brooklyn Rebbe, then you really get it. You're going to burn. I mean, building Melmish, you're going to burn in hell. You get a light up? Here, put your finger there. Come on, serious, put your finger there. Yeah? Now imagine that 60 times. 60 times like that, you get burned, you get burned, burned. Yeah. So most of life is to avoid burning in hell. And that's why I do things. Whatever I do, you know, I had a girl in a Beis Yaakov here in Brooklyn. And she says to me, after she graduated, she was in seminary, and she says, I'm not happy. She says, and I'm a good kid. She says, I never did anything wrong. I never went here, I never went there, I never talked to boys, I never went out, I never bought myself a Slurpee, I never did nothing, I never did anything. I said, but did you ever do anything right? All you did was stay out of trouble? And a friend of mine is Rosh Hashiva in an out-of-town community. And my daughter, you know, she wants to do things. I said, we don't do that in our family. I know the other girls, but we don't do that in our family. I kept saying to her, we don't do that in our family. And finally my daughter said, what do we do in our family? And I suddenly realized, I don't know. I know what we don't do. But to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Yeah? So I say to people, does God love you? Everyone knows the answer to that already. Because, you know, the Baal Tshuva movement has been around long enough. So we all know the correct answer. Yes. Does he like you? Is he impressed by you? You know, I've never found a firm Jew who can say that. You think he's impressed with you? Well, I mean, he'll wait for me till my final day. And if I do tshuva, then he'll open up his heart and his arms to me. And if not, then he'll cast me into the pit of hell out of love so that I can atone for my many sins. And then eventually I'll go to Olam Haba. We'll float around in some kind of light, which I have no idea what it is, but I'm sure it's worth going through all of that fire of hell to get there. You know? But impressed? You think Kadosh Baruch looked down at you and said, yeah. Yeah. You understand it's been 2,000 years. How many Jews have dropped out? Do you know what a tiny fraction of Jews sit in a Beis Medrash on a weeknight listening to a shiur? Okay, it's a great shiur, but awful pecan. How many people are doing this? You understand that you are of the top percentile of from Jews in the world? Of Jews in the world, of people in the world. It's a scary thing, but who do you think is going to bring Mashiach? You're going to bring Mashiach. Or who? It may be Jews who learn more, do more, but at the end of the day, most people do what most people do because that's what most people do. The people here have made choices. People here have thought about straightening my life and breaking out of that circle and going forward. So it's not enough just to do what I'm going to do. If I understand that I have a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, now I can't speak for everybody here. I don't have that many infinite friends. And if there's one who says, listen, I love you and I want to help you out, I would like to work on that relationship just from the point of view of the monetary, you know, compensation that could come for that. You know, I like to suck up to rich people. And this is like the richest. You know, he can do anything. You know, and I acknowledge the Kadosh Baruch Hu and I bring him into my life. I think, it might just be my impression, but other people pointed out too, that I have an unusual amount of siyata dishmaya. And people work with me and they go like, wow, that was unbelievable. And I said, nah, God does stuff like that for me all the time. You know what I mean? I'm so used to it already. I'm used to unusually good things happening for me. Because I look for a Kadosh Baruch Hu and I see how he's in my life all the time. Now the truth is, most people can do this. Somebody said to me, why does God do so many bad things to me? I said, he doesn't. He does so many good things, but you take credit for that. Then when something goes wrong, you blame it on God. So you drive like an idiot, and you didn't get into an accident, and you go, I'm such a great driver. You know that? And then one time you get into an accident, you say, God, how could you do this to me? You know? So if you're going to blame him when things go wrong, you got to give him credit when things go right. You know? But we don't look at it that way. You know? We look at all the bad things. I had a heart attack and a double bypass. It was supposed to be a triple bypass, but I got by with a double. Such an embarrassment at family gatherings. All my other brothers had triple, except for one who had a quadruple. And when I come in, I have a double. It's like, you know, I'm the embarrassment of the family. But anyway, so at the end of that year, you know, it'll be 3 years this Shvat. I had my heart attack on Gimel Shvat, which is my birthday. And I said to my wife, I said, oh no, I'm a tzaddik and I'm going to die on my birthday. Tzaddik and die on their birthday. I said, I've worked a lifetime not to be a tzaddik. I don't know how this happened. I'm going to die on my birthday. So I didn't. So I'm okay. Anyway, it was tough there for a while. It was a close one, but you know, good brother said, no, don't worry. You know, that applies to tzaddik. You're fine. Don't worry about it. He'll die completely unexpected. Anyway, so where somebody said to me, she lived to 120 in 3 days. She shouldn't die suddenly. Anyway, shouldn't die, just waiting for it. But anyway, so I saw somebody before Rosh Hashanah, and he says, what do you want for this year? I said, just a better year than last year. So he says, You ingrate, you told me that two doctors told you you were supposed to be dead. The guy who did the angiogram said, I don't know how you're alive. You're not getting enough blood to stay alive. The guy who did the surgery said that your artery collapsed into your heart. He couldn't even find it to bypass it. He had to guess where it might be. So two doctors told you you were supposed to be dead and you're alive. And all you can do is complain? I said, you're right. I want a year just like this year. And it changed my own perspective because I wake up in the morning and I say, I'm still alive. Thank God I'm still alive. Which, by the way, you can take that for granted. But trust me, if you wake up and you're not, it changes your whole day. Don't take my word for it. Talk to people. So if you understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so impressed with you and I'm working in this relationship, then I do more than I have to do. I'll cut up the vegetables and put a rose on the plate because I know I'm doing it because I have a relationship. And if you work on that, you'll come to the final level, which is called Kedoshim. What is Kedoshim? It says the Maseilas Yeshayahu. Kedoshim means the following. I was in a shul where a guy had galila, and the little chipchuk on that little elastic cloth snapped off. There must be an English word for chipchuk, but I don't know what it is. Yeah, you snap on the little chipchuks there, yeah? So it snapped off. You didn't know what to do. So one of the Mispalim gallantly pulled off his tie and handed it to him, and he used his tie, to tie up the sifter. No, after Shabbos, he came to get his tie back, and the rabbi said, you can't have the tie back. That's the gartel of the Sefer Torah. You can't wear that. He said, but it's my tie. It's one of my favorite ties. He goes, I know, then you shouldn't have tied it around the Sefer Torah. You could have a very nice blanket, but if you hang it in front of the Aron Kodesh, now it's called the Parochas, and you can't sleep with it anymore. You know what I mean? That's the din. It's raised up to Kedusha. If you become Kadosh, then everything that you have becomes Kadosh. And then whatever you eat is considered a korban, and whatever you drink are like Nesachim, and everything you do is Kadosh. And you have raised yourself up that you make the entire world into Kedusha. This is so foreign to us. I had a student in Or Samech. He was very advanced in Tai Chi. Now, Tai Chi, to me, being a simple person, is a very creative, philosophical way to beat up people. And I think that's, but you're supposed to meditate a little bit first and then beat them up. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, And so people walk around in their pajamas, and they go black belt, and you go monkey wrench, bam! But anyway... But, Sung Sung, and they're preparing themselves, But he says, it's a philosophy, and you're supposed to raise yourself up. The highest level of Tai Chi is you have to perform the tea ceremony. So what's that? You have to prepare a cup of tea, and you have to put energy into it. I said, did you ever reach that level? He said, no, but I reached the level where I was invited to a tea ceremony. I said, what's it like? He goes, I don't know what I was drinking, but it was not physicality. I was drinking pure energy. I have no idea what this means. It sounds like a vodazara to me. I don't know what it is. But the point is that you can have an experience that's not a physical experience, even though it's physical. It means you live your life out of this world. Chassidim Rishonim used to spend an hour preparing for Shmoneh Esrei, an hour saying Shmoneh Esrei, and an hour coming down from the experience. Because he used to daven and he was so far out of this world, it took him a whole hour to come down. Could we have any idea what that means? To be able to daven with that level of intensity? Spiritual. Yeah? I think most of the reason that Judaism is so difficult is because we have these terrible tunes. That's why nobody wants to bench anymore. Right? Because since the time we've been four, we've been going, oh, hey devo, make devo, yek devo, la no, gum, la no, gum, la no, gum, la no, na, 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 na. Can I go now? Because we're so burnt out, from these tunes. But imagine davening and it lifts you out of this world that you feel like you're someplace else. That's Kedusha. It all starts with breaking out of the Samach. It all starts by knowing that the Satan's name is Lamazet Tishalishmi. Sam Kale, blind. Thinking is a lost art. And it's not very common that you can find from Jews who mamish have the ability to think outside of the box. That is what Chesed and Nefesh always was. Rav Ruderman says during World War I, he saved up, there was no money for food, there was nothing, and somehow he stayed up penny by penny to buy himself a new pair of tzitzis. Now, I don't know if he didn't have a pair of tzitzis, or they were possible, I don't know what. But this is how the way I heard the story. Buy himself a new pair of tzitzis. And he went to his Rebbe, the Alter of Slobodka, and he says, Rebbe, look, I bought a new pair of tzitzis. And he said, maybe you should have given the money to Tzedakah. And everybody started nodding, and Rav Ruderman says, no, you don't understand. If I would have said, Rebbe, I saved up this money and gave it to Tzedakah, he would have said, maybe you should have given, bought a pair of tzitzis. Did you think this is the best thing to do? If you've ever been in Israel, then you know when you go into Tiyul, they have these industrial-sized boxes of tasteless cookies. They come in four different shapes, but they taste like nothing. Like Stelador or assorted, cookies, if you remember. They all taste exactly the same, And they turn into powder in your mouth, and they're disgusting, you know what I mean? But, they walk around and say, want a cookie? Sure, and everyone tastes two or three, because it's free, you know what I mean? So, it's free. God went to Yishmael and said, you want the Torah? He says, what does it say? Don't steal. No. Goes to Esau, says, you want the Torah? What does it say? Don't kill. Comes to the Jews, you want the Torah? How much is it? No? I'll take it. Think about with the cookies. You want cookies? Yeah. The person comes to me and says, you want cookies? I said, no. And they weren't even, they had no idea what to do. So they pause and they go, want a cookie? I said, no. Everybody takes a cookie. I said, I don't like the way they taste. They turn into powder. They're disgusting. And like everyone's nodding. Goes to the next person. Want a cookie? Sure. Because who stops to think? I have to stop to think outside of who I am and make decisions. Most people live average lives not because they're better, just because that way they don't have to think. They don't have to think. That's why I take the drugs, because I don't want to think. And people find other drugs to do. Some people have their cell phone. They never have to think. They don't even have to make eye contact. You know what I mean? They're just always looking at them. They're talking to you as they're on the phone, and they're this, and whatever it is they're doing over there. They get so many messages. Trump must be trying to make them Secretary of State or something. You know what I mean? He's constantly answering emails. He's on with Putin. He's on with this one. He's going here. He's going there. And they're always texting. They're always sending. They're always WhatsApping. There's so much stuff. So many important things. To stop and think, maybe this isn't the best I can do. Maybe I could be living a better life. We've all met people at some point in life, and they say, I wish I could live it over again. I say, well, why didn't you live it the right way the first time? I didn't think about it. I just did what everybody does, because that's what everybody does. So when I was younger and I don't have the grace and panache I have today, I said, well, hope you believe in reincarnation. But I find that people found that offensive. So now I say what I always say in those situations. Yeah. What am I supposed to say? Why didn't I stop and think about it? Well, think about it now. Now it's too late. What do you mean now it's too late? Now it's too late. I was in Arsamach, I taught the beginners program. This guy walks in, an elderly gentleman. Most of the people were in university. And I said, can I help you? He says, I'm joining the intro program. I said, really? He says, Rabbi, I'm 84. If not now, when? I said, good point. Whereas my son likes to say, what do you say to somebody on their 120th birthday? Have a nice day. But, so there's never too late. Never too late. At some point in my life, I could turn around and say, now I'll do it. But imagine you have your whole life ahead of you and you can think, I could do what everybody does, or I could live the exceptional life. When my father passed away, and he was always disappointed in me, and he made that clear at every opportunity. When I was running NCSY, I had a Shabbaton with hundreds of kids and I was doing wonderful things, and someone called up my father and said, you should know what your son is doing. And my father says, yeah, we want him to go to college. So I couldn't impress my father. Towards the end, he had Yenna Machla. He had only a few months left to live. And I just started my career. And I said, Dad, I spoke over here to 600 people. I spoke over here to 800 people. He says, doesn't the Torah say you're not supposed to brag? I said, I'm doing this for you, Dad. I thought you might get some nachas. I said, I'm so impressed with myself, I couldn't be any more impressed. But I thought maybe you'd get some nachas. And he says, ah, whatever. So it was a beautiful moment. Anyway, after he passed away, you know, a couple of months later, I was talking to one of my sister-in-laws, and she said, you know, all the brothers are jealous of you. I said, jealous of me? I said, they all have these big houses, and they all have cars, and they're all very successful, they all own the business, you know, I'm a poor, schleppy rabbi, you know? So they said, yeah, but you lived the life you wanted, and everybody else just did what everybody else did. You know? And he said, and that's why Dad was most proud of you. I said, he never said that to me. He says, yeah, but he used to say it to us. So you see, David does what he wants to. David knows what that, yeah. Couldn't say it to me, you know? But he was a Pela Shiyid. You know, when I had my heart attack, so they brought in the surgeon. So he says, tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, we're going to wheel you in, and we're going to do the operation. It'll be 4 to 5 hours, and then you'll be in intensive care for 2 days. Nobody's going to be allowed in. You'll wake up on Friday morning. So my family all starts talking, you know, well, who's going to be here? Who's going to stay? Who's in this? I said, did you hear the man? I'm going to be unconscious for 2 days. Go home. You know what I mean? Come back on Friday, put a little red in your eye, you know, make it sound like you were sitting outside crying. I'll never know the difference. So the surgeon, who was not a firm, he goes, a Pela Shiyid. Says, I didn't know they still had those. And I realized, yeah, my father would have said the same thing, my grandmother would have said the same thing. Ah, we're neither. Ah, ah, ah. Anyway, you know, and But that was it. You know, a person can look at their life and say, I'll do what everybody does because it's easier. Or there'll be people who will choose to live the exceptional life. Lahavdil, as Robert Frost says, and I traveled the road less taken, and that made all the difference. You could just do what everybody does, or you could stop and think and say, what's the best life that I can live? So when you turn around at the end, you won't say, I lived the life that everybody lived. He'd say, I lived the best life that I could. I'll end with this. Yeah. When I was sitting shiva for my father, so, you know, I'm one of six boys, of whom I'm the quietest. So four of them were upstairs, and me and another brother were downstairs, because it was just too many people. And we were working both sides of the room. And if you've ever been to a house of shiva, you know, you hear a lot of the same stories. And when there was a break in the action, my brother said to me, you know, Dad ran a florist shop for 50 years, and no one came to talk about that. They came to talk about this act of chesed and this act of tzedakah. And he said to me, you know, most of what we do in our lives, nobody remembers afterwards. And I said, you're right. The difference between an exceptional life and an ordinary life is making most of your life those moments that have meaning. That I try to say, is this the best that I can do? I live my life with a certain amount of angst. Because I say, is this the best that I could do? Could I be doing better? People call me up sometime to offer me jobs, you know, and they say, would you consider moving here, moving there? I said, I never say no to anything, you know, and I'll consider anything. If it's Ratzon Hashem for me to go there, I'll go wherever it is. I'll do whatever it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do. I'm not looking to take the easiest way. I'm not looking to take, obviously, the road to make the most money, because, you know, as I said once when I was speaking someplace, I said, imagine making a living speaking. Keep imagining, but you know, so it's really not, you know, you'll look at the Fortune 500, you won't find Pesach Kron, Rabbi Fran, you know, maybe Harari, you know, it's not the way you do it. You know, you can live your life based on what will bring me, you know, most comfort. Or you can say, what's going to be the most meaningful existence? Break out of that circle. Stop and think. And live the best life that you can. Thank you very much.